WPHM now presents Paul Miller's Week in Review.
Hey, everybody, from sub-zero cold to a new presidential administration, it was a busy week, and we've only got time for a few of the highlights here. I should remind you, we have all of our morning show interviews available on our podcast page at WPHM.net. This past Monday, we talked with Steve Fernandez, the owner of Country Style Market in downtown Port Huron. He's part of the committee on the Blue Water Area Chamber of Commerce Board, tasked with selecting a new leader for the chamber now that President and CEO Thelma Castillo has announced her resignation. I asked Steve what they're looking for in the next president of the chamber.
Well, we're working on laying that out right now, but we're trying to redefine the job description to give a little bit more accurate description of what the person's going to be expected to do that moves into Thelma's role. You know, that those are big shoes to fill. She has done an incredible job over the past 10 years. And probably the most important thing is once you lay out a clear objectives for the candidate, then you start to search for those candidates, and then you look for the attributes that they have that can fulfill that position, because you're not just representing local members. There's 652 members in the Chamber of Commerce, the Blue Water Chamber of Commerce, and that's a lot of constituents to be representing in the business community.
What is the Chamber of Commerce? Let's just sort of start there with sort of defining what this organization is and who its leader needs to be.
Well, over the past almost 100 years here of service to the community, it started probably as just a small group of business owners who wanted to get a collective voice. And this happened throughout the entire United States. So there's chambers everywhere. Mm-hmm. Mission creep or scope creep started to happen in the late 80s and 90s and going into 2010 and in the early 2000s, 2020 and whatnot. So there's just so many more things involved than just speaking on behalf of business owners. You advocate for policy, you advocate for expansion and growth of the membership, and sometimes that person has to be out in front of government meetings or travel to attend policy meetings like up at the Mackinac for the express purpose of representing those 652 constituents that pay dues for that. So the membership dues go to cover the cost of operating. The point of the whole chamber operation is to support the business community, reflect what our priorities are, and to advocate for those priorities in a way that is effective for our business partners.
What are the qualities that you're going to be looking for in the next chamber president?
That's a pretty broad stroke of the pen or the paintbrush to try and, but obviously a great communicator, ability to adapt to changing environments and understand. You got to be a great listener. That's going to be critical as far as getting a person's feet on the ground and starting to acclimate to this current business environment we're in.
What is the current business environment? What's it like to own a business in the greater Port Huron area in 2025?
Right now, it's still a economic struggle. There's a lot of economic headwinds. There's low foot traffic into the. It's not just the downtown area. It's all the businesses are currently struggling with the I would say second and third effects of what happened during COVID, and then the lockdowns and trying to recover and people's shopping habits and patterns change. So now there's more of an online shopping. It seems like the brick and mortar type of business is fading away because of advancements in technology. You can order clothes online. You can order food online. You can order shoes online. So all the people who operate these kinds of businesses have to compete against online and these big corporations that buy. Yeah, they buy millions of pairs of shoes where a small shoe store owner can only afford to buy, maybe a few hundred boxes of shoes at a time, So it's just the scales have tipped way more towards those who have the computer technology-based companies against those who have dependent on walk-in foot traffic for business.
Yeah, there have been businesses that have left the chamber in the last year or so. What can a new leader do to bring those organizations back?
Some of the departures will never return because they closed up shop. They either retired, they moved away, or they just don't have the financial wherewithal and energy to keep it going. But what will draw more people into or back to is just having an effective leader that has a clear vision for what we're going to prosecute as a chamber, how we plan on improving each business operation, or try to help at least understand what they need for help, and then to try and deploy forces or leverage. It's about leverage, really. It's learning how to leverage and understanding how other people can help in times of, you know, when things are tight.
How will this search be executed? What are some of the steps that you'll take, and what's your timeline for finding a new leader at the chamber?
Well, we're not in a rush to get to a bad outcome. So the governance board is going to be meeting. We're going to be clearly laying out what the new position description is going to look like, and then we'll start to pursue the interviewing. There are several candidates that have already put their name in the hat, but we haven't formally started accepting resumes yet, but we will pretty soon. Probably, I'd say within the next 2 to 3 weeks, we're really going to start pushing ahead with that process. But for now, you know, Thelma's still at the helm till February 7th, and the staff at the office, Sharon Wilton and Joyce Doyle, are two incredible people that are the backbone of the whole operation anyway. So we'll still have continuity of operations until we do select a new leader. And our board chair, Gino, is doing a great job of trying to get everybody rounded up so we could focus on this.
Steve Fernandez with us last Monday to talk about the search for a new Chamber of Commerce president. Donald Trump was sworn in to start his second term as president of the United States on Monday. Among his flurry of executive orders were mandates to eliminate diversity, equity, and inclusion in federal government. President of the Port Huron branch of the NAACP, Kevin Watkins, came in on Thursday morning to talk about what the elimination of DEI would mean.
Well, Paul, first I want to make a disclaimer. You know, people know me throughout the community, and I wear many hats, but I need to identify two hats here. One is that I work for SC4, I'm a professor there, and I work part of our student success coordinator. So I have my, opinion about the DEI from the SC4 lens, and then, of course, I'm the NAACP Port Huron branch president and have that perspective from that lens. So I will let you know what hat I'm wearing as we talk.
Fair enough. Okay. Let's just start with sort of an explanation of what DEI.
Well, DEI is what it is, and basically DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion. And we look at, I don't want to insult you know, the listeners, that they understand the definition of diversity, equity, and inclusion. But basically, we look at diversity. Who, I ask people, and I've been doing this for 2 years now since the attack became on DEI, when someone please help me understand, explain to me what is wrong with diversity. You know, that we're a diverse population. We are a land of immigrants. You know, we all come from somewhere, and we're a diverse population, and we come from different backgrounds, you know, our cultural makeup, and it's something we should celebrate. And then equity. Equity is one people really have a problem with. We look at equality or equity. Equity is basically us coming from different backgrounds and different, you know, socioeconomical. That equity is basically just we're trying to equal the playing field. When, you know, we all have that right to pursue happiness. But others, some had barriers. So we're trying to minimize and remove those barriers to give an equal playing field so we can all move forward and reach the goals we're going to reach. That's equity. Mm-hmm. What's wrong with that? And then inclusion is a big one, too, like diversity. Inclusion is just that a person want to feel that you're included, that you feel you belong, that we all walk in the room, that we belong at the table, we have a say, we have a voice, and we feel wanted. We feel that we are included and a part of the masses. So I ask people, okay, now that's diversity, that's equity, and that's inclusion. Can someone please, one person, tell me What is wrong with that? And nothing. I get nothing but crickets because they can't tell me because there's nothing wrong with that. And there's concern that what may come out of their mouths would be the appearance of racism. So they just don't say anything.
Those that do say something, those that are critics of DEI, though, say that what it does is it prohibits government agencies, for example, from hiring the best qualified candidate for a job and instead forces them to sort of fill a quota, almost like the old affirmative action.
And I'm a very great proponent of affirmative action because I'm a product of affirmative action. I tell people, I don't run from DEI, I say I'm a DEI hire. You know, I'm diverse. I'm different than most people at the table that I've had things put in place for me to help level the playing field. And then when I sit at that table, I feel like I belong and included. That thing, what they're saying there is a little bit on the racist side. So you're basically saying that because that we're opening it up for different diverse people at the table, you're assuming that person's not qualified. Now, isn't that interesting? So what are you saying there? What's that pink elephant telling us? That because you bring this person there for this reason through DEI, you're assuming they didn't earn the right to be there. This person may be more qualified than you with the credentials and their experience. What we're trying to do is bring a diverse mindset to the table to get different views. That makes us better. Every company that's really, if you talk to them, that are fighting to hold on, and even if they let their DEI department go, they say we've better with this. We've shown that, and the research shows that those companies progress and prosper more with the DEI concepts.
What is likely to happen as a result of these executive orders that have been signed by the president?
Let's just say we just celebrated a great man, Martin Luther King Jr., birthday and his dream, the judge from person by the content of their character, not the color of their skin. And we've taken a step backwards. The things that he want is that we are a diverse population. He talked about that, the white child and the black child come together, in harmony. Then we're separate. We're trying to separate. We're trying to say this group is positive, able to achieve, and this group is not. So that concerns me, and then to a point it angers me that we would take this step backward because people are attacking something they can't explain why they're attacking it.
We're talking with Kevin Watkins from the NAACP here in Port Huron, the Port Huron branch of the NAACP. Will there be legal challenges, do you think, to the executive orders?
There's so many out there. I think the people are spinning, but one thing I tell people, they should have understood and really took hold of the words of the great poet Maya Angelou when she said that if someone shows you who they are and tell you who they are, you need to believe them. So we should not be surprised. Everyone should have had a plan A, B, and C. And I want to put my SC4 hat on and say the SC4 was very, a visionary in this. You know, and we came together as a group, led by Jessica Brown and then President Kirk Cramer, knowing we had to do something. Even though it's sad and we're disappointed, we have to make a change, we have to. So basically we took on what it's all about in wellness. You know, this whole DEI is wellness and mindset for the public. And we just had to pivot. And now our department is the Office of Wellness, and Jessica Brown is the Dean of Wellness. And isn't that beautiful, that term wellness? I guess people accept that because we all want to be well physically and, as important, mentally. So SC4 has done a great job, and again, President Cramer, tons of accolades in regards to working with different entities in the college to move forward so we can maintain the basic concepts of what DEI is all about, diversity, equity, and most important, for all students, inclusion, and students, faculty, and staff. Mm-hmm. So we've done that. Now, as far as all the other entities, they're trying to find their way. So hope they. But one thing I want to mention with my NAACP hat is what the Port Huron School District is doing, K-12. The college has to be concerned about some of the federal money. With the local school districts can pivot a little bit more because of the state. But we have seven school districts in Sacred County, and there's only one led by Mr. Theo Kahulis, superintendent, that has embraced DEI, put him with his board behind them, put their feet in the sand, and they understand the importance of diversity, equity, and inclusion for their students, and they're going to maintain that road. And I'm so proud of him.
So while DEI is supposedly going away from federal government, they're doing away with DEI initiatives, you don't see it going away entirely from other workplaces and other agencies?
That is a big question mark, because people are scattering when they're scared. You know, it's like a bunch of mice and a cat comes in the room and people are scattering. That's why I said I hope people had a plan to move forward. I believe that, like, say, the college had a plan here at C4, and I believe that Mr. Kulis with the Port Union School District has a plan, but they're different plans. And I'm so proud of him that maintaining those acronyms, DEI, he understands that. The college had to do something a little different. But we still understand the focus of what we're trying to do for the students and the population. So that come, we'll see soon. How many days are we with this has become fruition? We saw it coming. So we'll see who has the determination and understanding. But I would ask any entity, any organization, first I would ask them, please, you want to get rid of this. You want to get rid of something that's very good. Please explain to me why. I'm a nurse, and that's one of the best words that we use is with anything, why. I have to understand why something, nothing happens by happenstance. It's a reason. Tell me your reason. I'm still waiting for someone to tell me what's wrong with diversity, equity, and inclusion. And I think each CEO, each business should ask themselves, will we be better as a diverse group? Is it better to have people from different backgrounds in my business? Do I understand that I have to look at where people are coming from and maybe do certain things equal to playing field? Would I want my people to feel that they belong? They belong here. They feel included. Wouldn't that make a better workplace?
Kevin Watkins, president of the Port Huron branch of the NAACP, with us on Thursday. Parents with kids who will be starting college in the fall should be working now on their financial aid strategies. On Monday, SC4 will be holding a financial aid workshop. College Vice President Pete Lacey and Financial Aid Director Joe Kassar came in to talk financial aid with us on Friday.
We have our Executive Director of Financial Assistance, Joe Kassar, here with us today. She's our expert, and not just the college expert, really. Joe is someone respected throughout the state and nation. We're really blessed to have her in our community, approaching four decades of financial aid knowledge and experience. So she will be there Monday night along with our other team members, really financial aid experts to help people in our community navigate that process. So I'll let Joe talk about that.
Joe Kassar, good morning.
Good morning.
You have been doing this a long time.
I certainly have.
And not to call you out or anything like that, but it just points out the amount of experience you've had. How have you seen financial aid change in the years that you've been involved?
Quite honestly, I think it has gotten better over the years. The form is not as complicated with technology. We're able to have the Department of Education talks with the Internal Revenue Service, so some tax information can transfer over, where in the past students and parents would be, I don't do my own taxes, I'm afraid. I don't want to look at it.
Absolutely.
Here, somebody help me.
This is probably the best time of year to start exploring financial aid, isn't it, for students that are going to be starting college in the fall?
We definitely want them to be applying for aid now. A lot of the financial aid is given on a first-come, first-served basis, so it's the perfect opportunity, and it's also the time of year when scholarship applications are due. So let's get it all taken care of all in one fell swoop.
What are some of the options of financial aid? I always remember hearing parents say, well, you know, we don't make enough money to be able to afford to send our kids to college, and yet we make too much money to qualify for some financial aid.
Absolutely. So what families need to do is the student needs to complete the free application for federal student aid. And I like to say that's the gateway to all of the financial aid programs, whether they be federal programs, state programs, institutional programs, that gets the door started. So they'll be applying for grants, scholarships, loans, work study opportunities. But that is the application that gets all the doors open for students and families.
I hear people cringe when they talk about the FAFSA form. You say that's gotten a little bit easier to
deal with. It has gotten easier. There's skip logic built into it. As long as the student and the parents have basic information, name, correct social security numbers, dates of birth, it's not complicated.
What's the best way to search out scholarships? Because we hear every year, there are so many scholarships that just go unclaimed out there.
Exactly. What I would encourage students to do is first and foremost, look at the college's financial aid page. Go to their scholarship page. They're going to have donor scholarships just like we do. They're going to want to go ahead and apply. Look at community foundations. We're very fortunate here in St. Clair County. We have the St. Clair County Community Foundation. They have scholarships that not only assist students going to SE4, but other institutions as well. And then there are some general scholarship search places, but we definitely do not want families paying company
to apply.
Yeah. Exactly. Don't pay to apply. Thank you, Pete.
This SC4 Financial Aid Workshop is coming up on Monday, 6 till 7:30 p.m. at the
Fine Arts Theater.
Fine Arts Theater. Okay, very good. Is this just for students that are planning to go to SC4?
No, Paul. We would welcome all students in our community and families. So no matter what college they're going to, the information as far as applying for the FAFSA is really the same. Mm-hmm. We will have our SC4 staff there to help with questions. Common news stories are how much debt college costs. And, you know, this is just a tragedy. That's not SC4 story. With the Michigan Reconnect program for adult students, with the Michigan Community College Guarantee, with all of the various financial aid that's available, I mean, students can truly get their first 2 years of college done debt-free at SC4. And so we would encourage anyone in the community to come on in and listen. They'll be able to talk to Joe and to her team and answer questions. But if they are going to a different college, we'll help them navigate that as well.
Joe Cassar and Pete Lacey from SC4 with us on Friday. Finally, a chance to reconnect with nature with a winter walk in Columbus County Park. It's the annual Tree Hugger Hike coming up on February 1st. Kirsten Lyons from County Parks with the details.
Yes, this is at Columbus County Park. It's one of our biggest parks, 411 acres, rolling topography, mostly forested, beautiful park, especially in the winter.
February 1st is the date. That's a Saturday, a week from this Saturday, from 10 till noon. Tell us what goes on during this hike.
Yeah, so we'll gather people up at the lodge, which is the big timber building at the end of the main entrance driveway. And the lodge is a lovely facility with restrooms and heated space. And from there, we'll head out onto the trails and explore the diversity of native trees in the park.
What are some of the trees at Columbus?
So Columbus is interesting because it has species and some individuals that are representative of pre-settlement conditions, so before settlers farmed or developed land in this area. So it's pretty unique in that it has really good representation of species that were here hundreds of and thousands of years ago.
Yeah, and these are some pretty big trees that have been there a long time, aren't they?
Yes. So a few of our oaks we're pretty sure were there before European settlement. And we have several different species of maple, but the fun one for us is the black maple is one of the dominant species in the park, and that's one of the best maple trees to make maple syrup from.
Kirsten Lyons from St. Clair County Parks with us this past week on the WPHM Morning Show. Again, remember, you can find all those interviews on our podcast page at WPHM.net. I'm Paul Miller. See you on the Morning Show 6 till 10, Monday through Friday.